The diplomatic maneuvering over the Nicholas Danilov case moved to center stage at the United Nations this week. But while both sides began the week with public restatements of their opposing positions, both quickly began indicating the standoff might soon be resolved. Secretary of State Shultz and Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze then moved the discussions out of the public eye behind closed doors. Head-to-head negotiating in the Danilov affair began last week when Secretary of State Shultz sat down with Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze in Washington.
Throughout the 14 hours of talks, the cloud of the Danilov case hung over Secretary of State Shultz and Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze. But according to both sides, that didn't prevent considerable progress in arms control and an array of other Soviet-American issues. After the talks ended, Shultz offered the most upbeat assessment of Soviet-American relations since November's summit.
There are quite a few items that seem to be insoluble a year ago that are working themselves out, or 6 months ago that are working themselves out.
The Soviet foreign minister, in his own assessment of the talks, said groundwork for a summit is almost complete.
In our view, a very substantial portion, if not more, of the necessary preparatory work in this direction has been completed.
In their second day of talks, the two men seemed to lose the scowls they wore at the start. Both sides appear to have separated the Danilov case from the rest of their business.
I think it is difficult to think of a fruitful summit without these cases being resolved, because they're going to wind up consuming great blocks of the time.
The U.S. insists a summit cannot be scheduled until Nicholas Danilov is free. Shevardnadze thinks the U.S. should back off its assertion that Danilov is innocent to clear the way for the summit.
Considerations of prestige should be pushed back to the background.
Despite the continuing deadlock over Danilov, the American assessment of the 2 days of talks is that they were constructive and positive. Even on the Danilov case, Shultz said Shevardnadze engaged in good faith discussions.
According to the public announcements, the Shultz-Shevardnadze meetings made progress toward a summit. Much of the political reaction involves the efforts at a deal that would free reporter Nicholas Danilov from the Soviet Union. From some quarters, the hard line: there should be no deal and no summit.
It is inconceivable to me that the president could greet Gorbachev in the United States with all of the hospitality that such an official visit entails and requires while Danilov is being held as a hostage. What that seems to me out of the question.
By many accounts, the main accomplishment of the first Reagan-Gorbachev summit was that the two got to know each other. But in spite of personal assurances from the U.S. president to the Soviet leader, the Danilov issue is unresolved.
Danilov himself is still sitting under virtual house arrest in Moscow with a sharp sword dangling over his head. And our whole relationship with Moscow is pretty much dead in the water, as it should be until Danilov is given unconditional permission to depart the Soviet Union. All of us are pretty fed up with the games Moscow is playing. We want to say so in a way that is so loud and clear that the message will penetrate even those thick walls around the Kremlin.
It's not difficult to find a variety of opinions.
In my view, we're headed towards a summit. I disagree with those who suggest that the Soviet Union that we need the Soviet Union. I think it's the other way around. They need us.
We should get off this business of talking about the summit and acting as if the most important issue in the American-Soviet relationship is whether there is or is not a summit. That is not the issue. The issue is Afghanistan. The issue is strategic developments. The issue also is Danilov. We don't need Gorbachev and president to go through the motions of negotiating to our progress. These summits are always symbolic anyway.
At this point, superpower planning provokes almost every reaction imaginable, and it is widely believed that a summit without freedom for Nicholas Danilov would be met in Congress and elsewhere with considerable hostility.
Nicholas Danilov is an innocent hostage who should be released. The Soviet Union bears the responsibility for the consequences of its action.
Did you, Mr. Danilov? Danilov's case.
Вы обсуждали дело Данилова?
Обсуждали. Есть хорошие шансы для решения этого вопроса.
There are good chances for solving this problem.
In Stockholm, Sweden, there was a major East-West agreement involving the United States, Soviet Union, and 33 other NATO and Warsaw Pact nations. After 3 years of hard bargaining, negotiators agreed on new rules for advance notification of troop movements and even a form of on-site inspection.
I think we gave away more than we all wanted to, but we also got more than we. I think it's a fair bargain. It's something that there's no complaint among our military that we got too little.
I am sure everybody who took part in this, let's say frankly, very difficult negotiations could be satisfied professionally, emotionally, and as a human being.
But the warmth of the Stockholm Agreement was not felt Monday at the UN.
President Reagan said the arrest and continued prosecution of correspondent Danilov is a transgression against human rights that's cast a pall over U.S.-Soviet relations.
Recently, after the arrest of a Soviet national and UN employee accused of espionage in the United States, an American correspondent in Moscow was made the subject of fabricated accusations and trumped-up charges. He was arrested and jailed in a callous disregard of due process and numerous human rights conventions. In effect, he was taken as a hostage, even threatened with the death penalty. Both individuals have now been remanded to their respective ambassadors. But this is only an interim step agreed to by the United States for humanitarian reasons. It does not change the facts of the case. Gennady Zakharov is an accused spy who would stand trial. Nicholas Danilov is an innocent hostage who should be released. The Soviet Union bears the responsibility for the consequences of its actions.
U.S. officials say 2 days of negotiations with Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze made no real progress, nor did 2 letters from the president to Gorbachev. Still, the president says he hopes the Kremlin leader has now gotten the message.
Can the chances improve for settling the Danilov case?
I'm not going to, Chris, comment on these things now. Everything's too delicate.
U.S. officials still object to anything the Soviets might label a trade of Danilov for Gennady Zakharov, the Soviet UN official accused of spying here. Danilov is not the only issue being discussed, but administration officials acknowledge it is dominating the U.S.-Soviet agenda and could block a summit.
As long as he remains in captivity, as he is now, that you could have a successful meeting. It's just that simple.
The president's speech was more positive when he turned to arms control.
I'm pleased to say that the Soviet Union has now embraced our idea of radical reductions in offensive systems. At the Geneva summit last November, we agreed to intensify work in this area. Since then, the Soviets have made detailed proposals, which, while not acceptable to us, appear to represent a serious effort. So we continue to seek a 50% reduction of American and Soviet arsenals, with the central focus on the reduction of ballistic missile warheads. If the Soviet Union wants only a lesser reduction, however, we are prepared to consider it, but as an interim measure. The ice of the negotiating stalemate could break if both sides intensify their effort in the new round of Geneva talks and if we keep the promises we made to each other last November.
Reagan said a reduction of strategic missiles can be achieved at the Geneva arms talks. The two sides are focusing on a 30% cutback. Gorbachev, in his latest letter delivered to the president, offered new ideas on curtailing Soviet missiles based in Asia, a move that could break the ice for agreement on mid-range missiles.
Again, if the Soviet Union insists on pursuing such a goal in stages, we are prepared to conclude an interim agreement without delay.
Reagan said agreement reached this week among 35 nations meeting in Stockholm would reduce the risk of war in Europe.
A major advance has been achieved. A concrete new set of military confidence-building measures, which includes inspections.
The president also said the U.S. is prepared to discuss a step-by-step program to limit nuclear testing, a pact the Soviets want. And he spelled out his own proposal for a pact that would allow research, development, testing, and deployment of the president's strategic defense,
a program the Soviets do not want at all. There was one last-minute change. Early speech drafts complained about a lack of Soviet response to Reagan's detailed arms proposal sent to Gorbachev in July. Gorbachev's letter arrived Friday. And in the speech, the president said the new letter is getting serious and careful consideration. But administration officials say Gorbachev's letter has no surprises. There are enough hints of progress in the president's speech to suggest a summit is still possible by the end of the year. But despite the latest Gorbachev letter, the president was quick to slap the ball back into the Russian court, especially on the Danilov case.
A spokesman for Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze in New York said the Kremlin is disappointed in President Reagan's list of negatives about Moscow's positions on world affairs.
You see, there is a very big gap in understanding between our two countries, I'm sorry to say. And this gap somehow affects policy makers. There is a tendency here to look at the Russians as another tribe on the other side of the river, on the other bank of the river, and it's a different tribe, different language, different customs, different ideology, and it means that it is enemy, which is not the case. We are different, but we are not enemies, at least not mortal enemies, maybe competitors. And this approach, black and white approach, which is taken by your side, influences policy.
After the dialogue Shevardnadze had with Secretary of State Shultz last weekend, the Soviet spokesman said Moscow had hoped to hear more conciliatory words from Mr. Reagan. Even so, one of Shevardnadze's deputies told reporters the Soviets are prepared to separate the Danilov affair from other Soviet-American issues.
We believe that the possibility to resolve the Danilov affair does exist. A solution, a resolution of this matter has not yet been found, but we believe that it can be found, it should be found, as soon as possible. The sooner, the better, and Washington knows about our position. The possibility for resolving that case does indeed exist. A possibility for resolving it very rapidly, very rapidly.
Meanwhile, about two dozen Soviet UN diplomats have left the U.S., apparently bringing the Soviet mission into compliance with the American expulsion order. State Department sources confirm the Soviet UN mission is now below the limit set by the U.S., and one American source hinted that might be part of an ultimate solution to the Danilov case. Soviet Foreign Minister Eduard Shevardnadze met secretly at the UN for 40 minutes with Secretary of State Shultz to discuss the Danilov affair. Afterwards, State Department spokesman Bernard Kalb said the Danilov case remains unresolved.
There
are good chances for solving this problem.
Confirmation of the secret meeting with Shultz didn't come until after Shevardnadze addressed the UN General Assembly. The Soviet foreign minister said superpower relations show promise, and a summit meeting is a realistic possibility.
Recently, there have been outlined encouraging silhouettes or outlines of serious agreements. In realistic terms, there's also the question of a meeting at the summit. And our affairs could move quite well if the American side so wishes.
Shevardnadze called President Reagan's UN speech propaganda and boasted of the Kremlin's one-year nuclear testing moratorium.
It's possible to imagine what a sigh of relief there would be among people if they were to hear that the United States, too, had decided in the world of peace to halt nuclear tests. That is what they were expecting from the President of the United States.
Secretary of State Shultz carefully avoided criticism after Shevardnadze's speech.
I welcomed Mr. Shevardnadze's call for the elimination of nuclear weapons, something that President Reagan has long advocated.
A spokesman for Shevardnadze first pretended not to know about his boss's secret meeting with Shultz.
They were in the same city, and they were in the same building at the same time, so happened, so they could run into each other.
Then confirmed it.
This meeting took place.
But he refused to detail any new Soviet proposals to resolve the Danilov case.
I remember the American president's advice not to rock the boat.
The Soviets apparently hope to prevent the Danilov affair from interfering with progress on arms control. but the Reagan administration has made it clear that arms agreements and a summit could not take place while Danilov is being held against his will.
At the United Nations, Foreign Minister Shevardnadze said a nuclear weapons test ban is the real test of sincerity, adding the Soviet Union is ready to sign a ban any time. President Reagan, anticipating the Soviet line, repeated the objections he made in his own UN speech Monday.
Any agreement to limit testing must be verifiable. We've made a number of proposals to improve verification of current treaties. The Soviets should accept these proposals or make one of their own to stop playing propaganda games.
The U.S. continues to test its nuclear weapons, while the Soviets have for a year advertised their moratorium. But the president went into more detail than usual, explaining to supporters at the White House why the U.S. must test to keep its weapons up to date.
Some time ago, for example, we found that the safety on the warhead for the Polaris missile wouldn't release.
Some time ago turns out to have been in the 60s. The Navy has no more Polaris submarines. The dated reference puzzled some Navy officials, but the president did better, updating the Air Force problem. Weapons on its vulnerable B-52 bombers had to be retested to be sure they worked at the lower altitudes flown by the elusive B-1 bomber.
Over one-third of all nuclear designs put into the U.S. stockpile since 1958, after what was considered to be adequate testing, required what's called post-developmental testing to fix unexpected problems and restore confidence in the reliability of those weapons.
The president's remarks, though, were not just aimed at the Russians, but also at Congress, which is on the verge of finally cutting his defense budget.
The Soviets have been convinced that we're serious about rebuilding our strength. But all this progress has now been placed in jeopardy by actions that taken in the House of Representatives. Actions just as serious as the attempt to block aid to the freedom fighters. If permitted to stand, these actions would pull the rug out from under our arms negotiators in Geneva and imperil our national security. The House would prohibit essentially all testing of nuclear weapons. Well, all of this is bad for our national security and for arms reduction talks. And if the defense budget arrives on my desk looking anything like that, I'll veto it.
That's the bottom line. The Reagan administration does not expect to reach any test ban agreement with the Soviets soon, but a defense defeat in Congress is staring the president in the face.
On Thursday, the House passed its version of the spending bill, including the one-year nuclear test ban, defense spending cuts, and a freeze on Star Wars research, all items the president says he'll veto. But while President Reagan was battling the House over U.S. arms policy, his chief diplomat continued the delicate bargaining in New York over the Danilov affair. Affair was the prime topic of conversation among journalists and diplomats at the United Nations this week, but both principal negotiators in the drama adopted low profiles after Tuesday night's meeting. Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze and Secretary of State Shultz typically ignored reporters' shouted questions about Danilov as the diplomats went about their routine schedule of meetings. But Thursday night, reporters discovered both men had given them the slip and were holding a third meeting inside the U.S. mission. As the negotiators emerged, however, they again greeted the waiting journalists with hurried no comments.
Anything at all? Secretary of State Shultz used extraordinary measures to prevent reporters from discovering the secret meeting with Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze, the third such tete-a-tete this week. State Department spokesman Bernard Kalb said the two men discussed but failed to settle the Danilov case.
What I am saying tonight is that the Danilov issue is still not resolved.
The Soviets also deceived reporters to prevent coverage of the meeting. The Soviets have begun sounding very optimistic about resolving the Danilov affair. Spokesman Gennady Gerasimov said a solution is around the corner. The Soviets, at least publicly, are apparently willing to disconnect the fate of Danilov from that of accused Soviet spy Gennady Zakharov and from an American order expelling Soviet diplomats at the UN.
We have this road to the summit. And on this road, which must be smooth, because big dignitaries are going up this road, it must be smooth. And it is not smooth now. It's bumpy. So we must remove this.
The Soviet spokesman suggested Danilov's freedom need not be a complicated deal.
He can take, if the solution is found, the first flight home. Why should he go to Berlin? Pan-American comes to Moscow now.
Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger told the Chicago business audience the arrest of Danilov will affect Soviet-American relations for a long time.
And I wonder if the KGB really thinks that a Soviet citizen could be led to betray his country for a few paperback books. Mr. Danilov, Frank, quite simply, was just framed. And this event, of course, casts a very troubled air over all U.S.-Soviet relationships.
British Foreign Secretary Geoffrey Howe was briefed on the negotiations because Danilov's wife is a British subject. If the talks are making progress, that is being kept a tight secret, though the outlines of a possible deal appear to involve freeing Danilov and later swapping some Soviet dissidents for former UN physicist Zakharov. Secretary of State Shultz told reporters the U.S. will not modify its order expelling 25 Soviet UN diplomats. Shultz says the Soviets are making a genuine effort to end the standoff. Shultz and the Soviets both say they expect the negotiations to be complete before Shevardnadze leaves New York next Tuesday. But the Secretary of State says the Danilov case won't be settled until the U.S. news correspondent has left Moscow.
Backroom bargaining, the big story this week. This is Don Miller, CNN.